Welcome to the Gloucester Writers' Center. We're very excited to have Zvi Zessling and Gloria Mindock here tonight. Zvi A. Zessling has published poetry in numerous magazines, both in print and online in 10 countries. Among the publication credits are Slant, Midstream, Main Street Rag, Precipicia, Bits and Street, Saranac Review, New Delta Review, The Chafin Journal, Green Door, Voices Israel, and Navua Literaire. He has won several poetry prizes in Israel and was a featured poet in the Jewish Poetry Festival and at the First Light Night in Brookline, Mass. His poetry was used in the Spring Rain Poetry Festival on Cyprus in 2012. Zessling reviews for the Boston Small Press and Poetry Scene, is editor of Muddy River Poetry Review, and publishes Muddy River Books. He has been a featured reader in various venues in the Boston area and San Diego, and in the Massachusetts Poetry and Boston Poetry Festivals. Zessling has done readings on local cable television and radio stations, and was selected by Boston Poet Laureate Sam Cornish to read at the New England Pen Discovery Reading. He is author of King of the Jungle, Ibbotson Street, 2010, a chapbook, Across Stones of Bad Dreams, Sivana Bhava, 2011, and a second full-length book of poetry, Fire Tongue, Sivana Bhava Press, 2016. He has taught at Suffolk University, Emerson College, and Boston University. Zessling lives in Chestnut Hill, Mass., with his wife, Susan.
Well, thank you very much, Amanda, and I also want to thank Henry Farini, who got me started with coming here a long way back, and I want to thank Gloria Mindock, who is my publisher and one of the big supporters of my poetry, and I appreciate that, and my wife, who's not last but not least, she's first and foremost in my heart, and she does all the photographs of me and does all my editing, so I'm really pleased with that. So I'll start with King of the Jungle, a couple of poems from there. The first one I'm going to read is entitled Moonlight. I'm sitting in my old rocking chair. On my lap is a solid book, thick with words. Like coffee grounds, the picture of the author on the back cover, his face, and 5 o'clock shadow. A pipe is between his teeth, steaming smoke like a winding road, all of it lit by moonlight streaming in the window as if it were a flashlight directed toward me. The full face of the moon, trying to decipher the words on the page, well, I think that if the moon can read, then this book about spaceships and aliens was written for it. On other nights, reading is not an option because the moon is scimitar-shaped, offering little light, just a big grin in the gaping mouth of the night sky. Other times, the moon beckons like a dayman walking across its acne face, kicking up dust like loose leaves in a cup. As it wanes and waxes, I sit in the rocker and watch the imperceptible movement toward darkness or light, wondering if we or some other civilization has made a base by which the eventual control of the Earth becomes a reality rather than material of science fiction, which I am sitting here reading by the light of the full moon, wondering what else moonlight brings. The other one I would like to read from here is entitled Louis XVI's Last Thought. Okay, so we have a fight over something silly. Not unusual for two people used to fighting. So I go to the florist and buy a dozen newly guillotined tulips to give her, which she throws on the floor, crushing them as if she were doing a Mexican hat dance, or perhaps a flamenco dance, the heels clopping on the linoleum floor. And that gets me thinking about Louis XVI's last thought, as his head is placed in the U-shaped slot, his hands tied behind his back, the cheering crowd like a modern-day rock concert waiting for the string of his neck to be snapped in two. The cord is pulled, the scrape of metal as the blade whirs its way down, and Louis XVI thinks, mad, the people cheer some more. Common people in their liberty, joy, loving the demise of the elite, their hands raised to God. Louis the 16th's head, now in a basket, while blood flows, the crimson tide of fraternity soaks the stage of equality on which the play has acted out. While she in the kitchen, trampling on my pride and apology, orders me to clean up the mess she made, and I wonder, who cleans up after the Louis 16th? Who takes the head from the basket and places it back on its royal owner? The next book I'm going to read from is Fire Tongue. This is my latest book that my next reader, Gloria Mundock, has published in Chervana Barber Press. And I will start with the title of the book, Fire Tongue. They called her Fire Tongue, not for the juicy stick that entered your mouth all the way to the throat, but for the hot spears of words fired like Apache arrows to the heart. No mercy when angry, no care for embarrassment for herself or the recipient. A tongue that whipped words bleeding on the victim's face, anguish running down the cheeks, and her face angelic yet fierce like Joan of Arc. O priestess of the mad, why did they take you from us? Your tongue prophesied, even in anger or hate. Your tongue spoke truth. A prophet they called you. Others said you were simply mad. So, the thing about writing poetry is I tend to write dark stuff. So, if you don't turn off your lights, you'll be fine. This one is called The Collector of Calamities. And it's actually written about my late brother-in-law, who one day was driving to pick up bagels on a Sunday morning in Denver, Colorado, and a truck went off the overpass, a garbage truck, on I-25 and landed on his car. And he had a broken neck, a broken collarbone, 6 or 7 broken ribs. He had swallowed some diesel fuel. He was in a coma for about 3 or 4 months, and he recovered miraculously, lived for another 10 years, and he would then take snips of paper, cut them out from newspapers, and keep them in a bowl about other people's tragedies. So this is a poem that I wrote for him. He sits in his study reading newspapers with scissors on his desk, cutting out snippets of random tragedies. In Montreal, a brick from the 17th floor of a building falls and hits a woman eating lunch with her husband at a sidewalk cafe. A car goes down a highway the wrong way, plows into a family of 7 riding to the beach, all die. Someone does not see a stop sign and strikes a child in a crosswalk who is walking home from school. Black and white newsprint, cut out, placed in a bowl, a record of lives extinguished like flames, a history of calamities by a collector who has survived big and small calamities and sees his survival in the deaths of others. So, let me see. My next one is called The Shadow of Death. And this one I actually saw. The poem will explain itself, but I was working and I looked out the window and this is what happened. Crossing the parking lot, a mouse with a piece of bread scampered out from under a car, darting toward a grassy area at the near end of the lot. A hot summer day, and I wondered how the mouse's feet felt on the hot tarmac, but before I could complete the thought, a foretelling of death crossed the mouse, turned, and a hawk swooped down. Talons extended, then closed as the hawk gripped the rodent, who, if it ever wondered what it was like to fly, was getting its wish. I live in Brookline, and this lady used to walk down the street every day, literally down the street. She pushes her shopping cart down the yellow line of Main Street, all her possessions packed in. Moth-eaten rolled-up rug, wooden folding chair with a slat missing in the back, two more in the seat. Boombox stuffed between the rug and a green garbage bag with clothes scrounged from mission bins or found in trash or stolen from another street person. Flip-flops and sandals, half-eaten box of Cheerios. Her life is in the cart. Dress is worn in dirty clothes. Pushes the cart down the yellow line on Main Street while cars honk and she does not care. So I have a particular passion for street people, and in Brooklyn we don't have a Main Street. Actually, that was Beacon Street. So it just fit the poem better. And I also like to write poems about war or its aftermath. And this one is called Inside the Head, the War Rages On. Morning jumps up like a baby and you want to change the diaper of your life. The woman who has treated you like a prisoner of war. The children who hound you as if you are in Baskerville. While the dog you should be walking has done his thing in the corner of the living room. Depression comes in four flavors, and you choose vanilla, which happens to be the scent of the candle she burned when you found her in your bed with someone from the Chicago Bar and Grill. You long for the peaceful days of war in the jungle, when in the heat you smell the enemy miles away, even when they melted into vines or rocks or hidden caves, and the odor of rotting corpses that defied the separation of warrior and civilian denied your senses. Here's two more that these are post-Vietnam men who I read about in the newspaper and have written poetry about. Excuse me. This one is called His Life Ended Under a Bridge. His life ended under a bridge near Pittsburgh. A high school football hero who joins the army, goes to Nam, kills and is nearly killed, finds solace in drugs, returns home, finds a woman who does drugs, hangs out under bridges, until one day during an argument, she shoots him in the head, his own pistol from the war. He dies twice. And this one is called The Ex-Hippie. Some doped-up ex-hippie living on the street, a tin cup bought in a dollar store, makes you wonder how they ever let him in the front door. He sits at the corner of Congress and Franklin, smoking a joint as cops walk by and notice more trouble arresting him than leaving him there in his camouflage hat and t-shirt. Every so often, someone drops a nickel or a penny in the tin cup, and he nods as dilated pupils squint in daylight, food in his beard dredged from a dumpster, shoes with holes, and a wrinkled t-shirt with peace sign. For a buck, he will tell you he skipped Vietnam for a ticket to Canada, worked on a farm for his drugs, grew some of his own, came back with a different name, left a couple of kids up there by two women. A Vietnam vet once kicked his tin cup, scattering the change because he did not like the ex-hippie's t-shirt and camouflage outfit. But the ex-vet, like the ex-hippie, had survived the war, drugs, and his own demons. The vet is a businessman now in his suit and tie and drives a Caddy Escalade, has a wife and three children, one in graduate school, one in college, one in high school, house in the suburbs, two dogs, a cat, and a talking parrot. Sometimes the ex-hippie wanders the streets like a lost cow at midnight, out to the suburbs where he pisses on the businessman's lawn in defiance, an infiltration of the military-industrial elite. One winter he was dead, frozen, a roll joint still in his hand, the beard a horror of icicles. He was missed in a police roundup of the homeless. And those are true stories about two men and people who are veterans. You should think of them more kindly when you get the chance. This one is called, I don't want to read that one. I do, however, want to read this one. It's called Ghosts in the Wall. And it's about the Vietnam Memorial and the first time I went down there. Actually, it was the second time. Ghosts in the wall, behind the wall, looking out at you, you looking at them. People touching names with reflections of sorrow. Ghosts speak out through the names. Ghosts last through lifetimes. People forget ghosts, and the ghosts always remind them. I'm going to read two more poems, and that's going to be my 15 minutes that I've been allotted. And I could have done 20, but Gloria's going to do 20.
I heard she's doing 45.
She might do 45. She could very easily. I'm going back to my first book, which is called King of the Jungle, and this one is called Old Friends. What has happened to my old friends? Some have vaporized in saunas. Others have become autographs in someone's yearbook or on loose pages. There are those dead and desiccated in the jungles or rotted in deserts. Some became statistics on highways, while others counted dollars as if they were pebbles on a distant beach, while the rest I look up to at night, bid them farewell, make a wish, and join the waiting pillow. And this was my first visit to the Vietnam Memorial, and this was the impression I had of it. Descend into America's hell. Black wall rising like death itself, sinking lower, feeling depression pushed down, names, faceless names, stare back through dotted I's and crossed T's, through curved C's and rounded O's. The names stare back, letters rearrange and ask, why am I here, why not you? There are no answers, there never were. Just names and tears from those who stare at the names. And, well, I said two, but I'm going to read a third one to finish off. So Gloria will have only 43 minutes instead. So this is called What Armies Learn. Clouds come in like wet gray blankets, squeezing water until grass grows a foot high and trees drop their nuts to float away like a Roman fleet to Carthage. Weather and war are symbiotic. Napoleon and Hitler learned about Russian winters. America did not survive Vietnamese jungle rot. Parasitic vines grew in his ears. The camouflage was real, and he will be found like a Machu Picchu mummy in 300 years or 1,000 years, a marvel to the victorious digger. So that's my reading for tonight. I hope you enjoy it. And someday we'll be back.
Thank you very much.
Gloria Mindock is the founding editor of Chivana Barber Press and one of the USA editors for Le Vieux Littéraire. She is the author of Whiteness of Bone, La Portille...
At Heaven's Gate.
Translated into the Romanian by Flavia Cosma, Nothing Divine Here, and Blood-Soaked Dress. Widely published in the USA and abroad, her poetry has been translated and published into the Romanian, Serbian, Bosnian, Montenegrin, Croatian, Spanish, Estonian, and French. In 2014, Gloria was awarded the Evanston Street Press Lifetime Achievement Award, and in 2016, Gloria was the recipient of the Allen Ginsberg Award for Community Service by the Newton Writing and Publishing Center. Gloria recently was published in Academia, Poetry.com, Gargoyle, Muddy River Poetry Review, Nate's Mate, and her work is forthcoming in the We Are You Project anthology. She is the author of three chapbooks, and her fourth chapbook, Opposition, is forthcoming by Yusoko Stampa. Gloria lives in Somerville and has a studio space in the Arts for the Armory where she holds readings, workshops, and runs a bookstore called The Lost Bookshelf, where new and used books are sold in the space and online. Welcome, Gloria.
Thank you, Amanda, for having V and I read tonight. And thank you, Megan. And it is an honor to read with V. And his book, Fire Tongue, it reminds me of all the Eastern European writers that I love so much. So I'm really thrilled to be reading with you, so thank you. My poems are very dark, and I write about the atrocities. And I get asked all the time from many people, why do you write about the atrocities? And I say I have to, because I feel like it's my calling. So I wrote a poem that kind of answers to that. Don't. Don't tell me my writing is too graphic for you as you sit in your nice apartment, enjoying the day, sleeping peacefully at night. You can do this. They can't. Laying on the ground in the dirt, afraid to sleep, the villagers wait for death, machine guns, knives to take them out. Women are raped, clothes taken, left to die in their nakedness. Don't ask why I write about the horrors in the world. It could be you, but it is not. Imagine what it would be like to have your son killed or your daughter taken or see your children with no legs. Tell me, where do they go for help? You know where to go. Don't ask me to stop talking of the atrocities. Maybe someday you will know. Maybe someday you won't have your comfortable place. No wishes for you. All the stars have fallen. Pick one up by the side of the road and get busy. A while ago, I read in Harvard Square, and I read with someone named Brother Nicholas, and afterwards we were talking, and he told me I was a light in a dark world, and so I thought, poem material. So I took that phrase and wrote a poem out of it. You told me I was a light in a dark world. Hanging on to these words, I continue. Every day, there is slaughter, murder, horrific things done to a body, things that make me sick. Day after day, death happens, despite the sun coming out to show the blue of the sky. Beauty and ugliness in battle, light and dark in battle, each day a tug of war, and each day each side wins somewhere in the world. You told me I was a light in a dark world. Why did you do this? Do you know something I don't? Am I an angel alone weeping with words coming out of my mouth that no one listens to? Ascension. They were all led to an embankment, pushed over, shot in the head or hacked. Piles of bodies, a crime. The courage of those who died made their bodies beautiful. Ascension into the air where God touched their soul. Evil is evil, so mourning is essential. Two lion cubs played nearby, so cute and young. They understood what life was, but when older, like man, their innocence is awakened by the tongue. Out. We all decay into a nothingness, into the abyss, forever. No meaning to a life lived, it is over. Memory lasts for only a little while, then disappears. Creation annihilated. We wait for our perfect bodies to die in torture and suffering. How long will a wreath lay on our graves? Only once. Leave a rope around the gravestones so the dead can climb out. This next one I wrote after reading about Pakistan and some of the bombings and stuff there. There is too much shrapnel under everyone's skin. Everyone has been fired at, hit, straight in the heart, hurt, devastated, never to love again. Bits of damage attaching itself to an organ, making it difficult to beat. We are all broken. It is the type of world lived in today. No matter how hard we try, we can't attach ourselves back to solace. Storms just stack upon us in volumes, and the destruction is heavy. With eyes closed, we like the dark. Pretend not to be awake. It is better this way. The debris and our souls arrive in a timely fashion and climbs a vine leading to the heavens. God said this would happen. The vine stays, the debris adds up, and the angel laughs. Dangerous. You have lived here before, walked the same streets, felt the same things. Different air attacks your lungs. Somebody else exhaled the air you breathe in. You think it human, but it could be animal. Breath so fierce, you have to sit down. Nothing changes. Every day for eternity, you live, breathe, die, live again, war again, over and over, power and slaughter. One time you are born in the right country, next time you're not. Face it. It's one forever suffering in different degrees. Eyelids heavy with fear, wanting to close. But that won't erase the damage. In the early 1980s, I worked with Salvadoran refugees. And one little girl that I worked with was 9 years old. And she fled, but while in El Salvador, she laid on top her mother's dead body and faked dead so that she wouldn't get shot. So in many of my poems, Maria is like a saint-like figure. So this is one of the poems that I wrote. Maria's uncle. Maria had his guts in her hands, tried to push them back into his body, thinking it would save him. She couldn't. Screaming into her palms, his intestines touched her lips. She cried such sorrow, the abyss shook. Now Maria travels the world, speaking about the dead, telling the world it is hopeless, that no one is capable of a quiet tongue. With outstretched hands, she handed everyone a flower, said, "You must water it to live, but if not, the depths of hell will assign you a seat." In El Salvador, when a tree doesn't produce fruit, the people would hang garbage in the trees to shame the tree. During the Civil War, body parts were hung in the trees to shame the people. Tree. I cannot look at trees anymore. All I see is a finger, a lung, hearts and intestines hanging from the branches. The soldiers tried to scare me into mercy. There are no leaves to notice. Even though I survived, my sight sees my village, friends, family hanging. On one finger was a ring, my husband's, and I knew he was gone. I stumble now in this life petrified of trees. Once they gave me shade, fruit, but now only sorrow, grief. I can't walk past them now without thinking of rain, without thinking of black, without thinking of an endless abyss. So are you depressed yet? Listen, next one. The soldiers fire into the people, grabbing women and young girls, shoving bottles where no bottles should be. The soldiers beat them until lips are cracked, rape them again. There is no boundary not broken. The stories travel from country to country. The world says there is no proof. So many died without a burial or casket. So many died in pits unaccounted for. Can't you hear their weeping around 2 a.m.? How can you sleep? How can you, when the world holds such a stench, holds so many bones? This I wrote after a bombing. Sorrowful air. The terrorist walks down the aisle. How many of us can he get if he acts now? The bomb goes off, blood and body parts strewn, fragmented all over. All for the love of the glow of the smoke blowing up into the air. The dead seem to hold on to the earth. The wreckage looks like a nest for some wild beast. Only those left, the witnesses, the living, feel the pain, cry, covering hearts with hands, bow heads. Their sounds are loud. Many spirits descend on this sun-streaked day that turned cloudy. Hope was abandoned in the bloody sky as grief touched our lungs. This one is self-explanatory. I saw a picture in the New York Times on the front page, and this poem came out of it. Karachi, Pakistan. Three children, all under five, sit on a hospital bed covered in blood. A bomb exploded, and these children survived. From this photo in the New York Times, I could see fear in their eyes. The middle child had the most blood covering his body. I wonder, what was he thinking? There is no end to the blood flow, and there never will be. Bombs will continue and bodies will pile up. Many won't know what hit them, but these children will never be the same. These children won't dream because they won't sleep. Forever in their eyes will be the sight of the dying, the smoke, the building shattering around them. And as the mess is cleaned up and no evidence remains, who will clean the children? Blood forever exposed on them. I wonder, what are they thinking? This next poem, the last stanza is taken from Worse Than War by Daniel Jonah Coldhagen, Rwanda interview. How do I shake hands with the mass murderers to get an interview? Knowing that those hands swung a machete, slaughter in motion, the Hutu annihilating the Tutsi, a well-planned elimination. Do I really want to hear their explanation? What fueled them? Why this deed? What morals are left as the blood flies? To what point does the torture stop? Kill them all. That is how it is. Get them. Hack them down with a machete. Hit them with a club. Pull them apart. Dump them. And continue on. How do I interview this? And I'll close with a poem called Orchestra. I don't think I understand who I am, bohemian girl who never sleeps. Can I speak to you about my poetry? Listen, you will hear new words coming from my voice. Such restless power taps at your window on a quiet evening begging to be let in. Curious, you sit down and read my dreams of regret. Can you hear me screaming as the world kills one another? El Salvador, Rwanda, and Bosnia, I am your messenger, a girl who talks every night to the stars. One by one, they listen and are confused. They die out without solution. 4 billion years, and man is still igniting the shadows. Thank you.
Thank you. It feels important to have important poetry read. We're on the cusp.
Yeah.
And there is, if there's no remembering and no noting, then there is no progress.
Right.
And it's very important. And I thank you both for sharing your darkness and your light with us.
Thank you.
I'm dark. She's pitch black.
You're getting there, though.
Yeah, I'm getting there.
Yeah. I mean, I think we have such a culture of glossing over the hard stuff. of not looking it in the eye. And it's important to note that there is no shame in looking it in the eye, and that's actually what needs to happen.
Yeah.
So, well, thank you guys so much for coming up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's really incredible to hear, and really powerful work.